AI-powered applications such as ChatGPT and other ones. They're tools that can be leveraged in many ways.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is Myths versus Reality about AI. Now, there's a stark difference between what people consume about AI versus what AI actually is. So much so that there's all these different myths that are being perpetrated and really infused into mainstream media, even in board meetings, even in company manifestos. So I'm going to go through some of these and maybe discuss some, whether they're true, false, or both. I've been speaking at quite a lot of events about AI and quite a lot these days about generative AI. And in the question times, I'm noticing some of these narratives that may need addressing. So here's some of them. AI is going to cause massive job loss. AI isn't as good as what humans can create. AI will make us all lazy and incompetent. AI is evil and a threat to the human race. AI is only for big companies, and you need a lot of data scientists to be successful. Buying AI technology alone will fast-track an organization's AI success, and AI will automatically bring return on investment. So let's dig into a few of these and let's try and get a more balanced perspective on them. So the first one, AI will cause massive job loss and we will all lose our jobs. This is kind of a mix. It's true and false. So there's predictions that are coming from everywhere that AI will create job loss. Kai Fu Lee, who's an AI investor and formerly the top Google executive in China, has warned that AI advances will be much more disruptive to workers than other technologies. He predicts that 40% of the world's jobs will be lost to automation in the next 15 years. In fact, some experts believe that robots will eliminate 800 million jobs by 2030. These kind of statistics can be worrying, and particularly in some sectors like manufacturing. But we have to keep in mind that this happens with every technological advance that enables humans to become more effective and processes to become more efficient. But if you think about the personal computer and the internet, if we make a comparison, there was a McKinsey report that stated that over 19 million jobs have been created as a result of the personal computer and internet that didn't exist before. And I think this is true of most technologies. I sometimes give the example of, you know, I think it was back in the 50s or 60s with the telephone switchboard operators. You know, every time a phone call was made, someone had to plug the different numbers together to connect the calls. Obviously, that doesn't happen anymore. And even in companies, there used to be masses of typing pools where typists would be typing up company memos and things like that. That doesn't happen. Everyone does that themselves now. So whether it's 40% of the world jobs or more, there is going to be a massive change. But as jobs get taken, new jobs will be in their place. You know, if you think back, for those of you who can, before, you know, the internet and computers were widespread, there were so many jobs that people do now. You know, there was no social media in those days. So all of the whole industry around social media didn't exist. There's so many new jobs that have been created because of advances in technology. However, I did do a very interesting episode, which was episode 56, called AI and the Economic Singularity, Will AI Take All Our Jobs? With the author, Callum Chase. And he and I discussed how AI was progressing, and he did predict that we would all eventually lose all current and future jobs, and that we would need to restructure the economy with things like a basic universal income that could possibly be funded by robot taxes. So the implementation and what's going to happen is still unclear, but we do know that a lot of the current jobs will go, there will be new jobs, but I think the thing that's really interesting is the speed of change. You know, the fact that we now can get AI writing code, you know, a few years ago I would have said that wasn't possible, but that actually is possible now. So there's a lot of things that are changing. I do feel that humans will continue to need to be fact checkers and supervisors and really conductors of the whole machine orchestra. And they will be very important roles because machines are only as good as the data they're trained on. And, you know, just the example of Tay, the Microsoft robot that had to be taken down in 24 hours because of all of the things that she was learning on Twitter from humans, which was terrible. So, you know, data is critical, and getting good data and unbiased data is very, very important. So this whole thing is a true and a false. There are very real concerns about many jobs will be lost. However, new jobs will be created. And then we just need to be mindful of having human integration and a willingness to sacrifice, you know, some efficiency to have a human in the loop. So it's a very interesting area. The second one, AI isn't as good as what humans can create. I believe this comes from a place of fear, you know, fear that machines will take a lot of the creative jobs, for example. I did put a post in LinkedIn about a new generative AI that created beautiful works of art, and that post generated so much controversy from artists who were really offended by AI generating art. And so, as with all of these statements, there's nuances. Let's say quality of work is in a normal distribution bell curve. So where does AI fit into that? Based on generative AI, like what ChatGPT comes up with, especially if you give it good complex prompts, large language models that ChatGPT and others like it are created from can create good content. Maybe not Pulitzer Prize winning content, but good. So the tools are better than mediocre, which is where they were a few years ago. You know, we've had large language models for a while. So the question for creators is, where are you individually on the bell curve? Are you a good creator? If so, then AI is your peer in terms of quality content. Are you a great creator? Then AI may be lesser at the moment. It is improving constantly. So it's really asking about, as a human creator, how good is your work? You know, where is it? So you can argue it is on a curve, and humans are on a curve as AI is on a curve. But the interesting part that we have to face is how fast AI is progressing. You know, I did a thing about generative AI and large language models, and it was GPT-3 in those days, and it was pretty good. I was able to generate pretty decent blog posts from it, but it's not in the league that GPT-4 is today. So now large language models can create excellent content. They can knock out press releases. They can create competent, informative blog posts. They write moderately compelling emails, and they've evolved very fast. Have your skills as a creator grown that fast in the same time? And that's the challenge we're facing. So if someone is a great content creator, what does it take for you to become an amazing content creator? Those of you who are amazing, what will it take for you to create content that gets top-tier award-winning levels? So it's an interesting topic. The third point, AI will make us lazy and incompetent. Well, there's some truth to it, but not entirely. You know, educators are currently worrying about ChatGPT and plagiarism. Now, there are algorithms that can detect plagiarism and that can detect whether ChatGPT is being used. But if we look back to the introduction of the calculator, you know, there were the same fears abounding. When calculators were developed, there were concerns that they would reduce students' mathematical ability as they may rely too much on calculators. However, what was found was that with calculators, students had much higher problem-solving scores and better attitudes toward mathematics and better self-concepts of their own ability to do mathematics. The same will be the case with AI-powered applications such as ChatGPT and other ones. They're tools that can be leveraged in many ways. If you think about the last 30 years, how many people under the age of 30 would feel confident in their ability to navigate to an unknown destination using a paper map? You know, now everyone is confident using a map on their smartphone. But what about even things like, you know, encyclopedias? What about finding information in a hardcover encyclopedia. Most people under 30 would feel less confident, or most people at any age these days, than Googling for something. So there's no question that technology has changed how we think and how we work and how we get things done. We have lost some skills along the way. We've replaced paper map reading with map application navigation. We've replaced memorizing friends' phone numbers with contact files on our smartphones. And in doing so, we've freed up a lot of our cognitive capacity to do other things. People, and all life really, defaults to what makes things as easy as possible with as little effort as possible. I mean, that's just nature. Natural selection favors those who conserve resources over those who can expend them fruitlessly. So anything we can do to make things better, faster, or cheaper, we do. The role of AI in that scenario should be obvious. We use it to do less, to defer more to machines. So if we want a society that works, we don't want to forbid the use of great AI tools, but we need to consider why human nature sometimes leads people to misuse tools that they've stumbled upon. The next one is AI is evil and a threat to the human race. This is false. It's not inherently evil. That's not to say that it's risk-free. Said differently, we are more, these systems and the developers of the systems are more of a risk to ourselves if we don't exercise caution in how we go about our AI experiments and projects versus, say, you know, killer robots taking over the world. Now, I know Stephen Hawking, Bill Gates, and Elon Musk have argued for well over a decade that one of the ways the human race could become extinct is due to AI. On the one hand, this is possible, depending on how we use it and who's in control of it. If you think about AI in control of a nuclear program, that could be dangerous. It's very logical, and if it perceives a threat, it could launch a nuclear missile, whereas having a human to do that would open the door for diplomacy to solve the differences before it got to that stage. So when we're building AI systems, particularly at scale, organizations have a responsibility to enable and train their users on the technology at hand. And so I remember reading somewhere that someone compared it with making a potentially dangerous tool like a power saw. You know, the tool maker has a responsibility to build the saw in a safe way with appropriate safeguards, training material, etc. So the increase in the investment of and use of AI presents a few new risks. AI can behave in unexpected and inadequate ways in a production environment versus the original design or intent. Models may reproduce and even amplify biases that is contained in the data. And the more automation there is may mean fewer opportunities for detecting, correcting mistakes and unfair outcomes. So we need to put guardrails in place to prevent these risks. So we need responsible AI strategies, which is a way that we can deploy it with stated intentions and be aware of how we can make it safer. So some common strategies are, you know, intentionality, making sure that they are designed and behave in the ways aligned with their purpose. Explainability, you know, it needs to be explainable by humans and not just the ones that created the system. And of course, accountability, you know, having a centralized place to seamlessly view which teams are using what data, how and in which model, in which models. So I think some of the things we need to consider in this is really providing interoperability for internal stakeholders, testing for biases in the data and the models, documenting decisions, ensuring that the models can be explained so that they can identify if something goes wrong or could cause harm or have risk of harm, and creating a data culture of transparency and diversification of thought. And finally, establishing a governance framework for AI and data. Number five, AI is only for advanced companies and you need to hire lots of data scientists to be successful. That's false. AI is for everyone, no matter what their job title. There's so many different use cases for all areas of all organizations. And while in theory, AI is for everyone, most organizations don't really know where to start, and they're overwhelmed when it comes to incorporating data and AI into their business. So if they, or if they do know where to start, they often face a lot of challenges that impede successful adoption, which can be, you know, a lack of a clear AI strategy and business objectives. I mean, that's something that we see time and time again. And you really need to start with an AI strategy which is aligned to your business strategy with both short and long-term objectives. And it needs to go top-down and bottom-up in a very robust way. So the way we do this for our clients is creating an AI strategy blueprint that aligns the AI strategy with the business strategy and ensures the implementation of AI results in a successful project. If you want to find out more about that, you can go to Yularis.com, search for services, and then look at AI strategic blueprint. On top of that, there's the AI skill gap. You know, there's a lack of necessary skills and expertise. So investing in education and training, you can actually upskill your employees and plan what people to hire that fill those gaps. Organizational silos and segmentation is another area. And this is when, you know, a lot of companies tend to just silo both data and also leaving everything to the data science team. And really, business leaders need to be involved in this. They need to be able to speak AI and be able to lead from a business perspective. So they need an AI strategy. And I don't believe in just leaving the AI strategy to IT or data science, because they can implement for sure. But that means they're not business strategists. The business strategy would be missing, and it provides a higher chance of failure. I actually did create an online training course for healthcare business leaders to understand and plan AI strategy. And again, that's on our website under AI Academy. So finding the right talent, that's another area that needs to be looked at and something that we also help with. And ensuring a technical infrastructure can support the necessary quality and quantity of data processing that you require. So in order to scale successfully, you know, you can use any organization of any size can use AI, but there's some things that you need to do first to make sure that you're using AI that's going to be very successful and going to move the organization forward. Number six, buying AI will fast track an organization's AI success. Well, AI alone and any AI will not. According to the Gartner Hype Cycle for Artificial Intelligence, the urgency and criticality of productizing AI and transforming business are driving the need for operationalization of AI platforms. These platforms enable reusability, scalability, and governance, which accelerate AI adoption and growth. So AI technology is certainly necessary, and it's like the entrance to the ballpark these days. And it can certainly be transformative, but you need a strategy, you need the right use cases, you need the right people and processes. Just buying any old AI won't help you achieve potential. You need to be using the right AI to do this. And that's, of course, why I always say that you should start with strategic AI blueprint, because that will plan the right AI. Number seven, AI will automatically bring return on investment. That's false. You know, like I've been saying for well over a decade, AI is not a panacea that's going to completely change the organization just like that for buying any AI. You really need to plan it. AI can be expensive, but it can also be inexpensive. You need to assess what you need as an organization and then look at the different ways that you can do it. Whether you are working on optimizing your processes or more advanced applications that can generate millions to hundreds of millions in incremental revenue, it's not a panacea. It's not going to do this overnight. It's a powerful tool that will optimize every single process, but it has to be embedded into the organization's operating model to make an impact. So how can organizations move past the conceptual phase and their proof of concepts and pilots to really reach AI at scale? There's lots of different ways that you can do this, but you should start with a strategic AI blueprint that identifies the projects that are going to net the most benefit for the company and what data is required for those, and start with them and then piece by piece build into the bigger picture. So it's not a magic bullet, and neither is the return on investment associated with it. But you know, a tangible benefit, if you plan it correctly, will be achieved from doing it. So in conclusion, you know, all of these Some of them have some elements of truth to them, but they're not completely true in the way they stand. So companies around the globe are struggling to turn business data into business impact. And there's a lot of misconceptions around AI that really complicate an organization's ability to really implement an AI strategy and act on it and see true business value. And I hope that by dispelling some of these seven myths about AI, that you can address some of the individual and collective use cases and build a strategy that you can implement that will give you major return on investment and move the needle on your company. If you want any more information, you can always contact me or go to our website, eularis.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.